This is Film Center, your number one show for real entertainment industry news. No fluff, all facts. Now, here are your anchors, Derek Johnson II and Nicholas Killian.
I'm Nicholas Killian.
And today, Nicholas, we have a very special guest.
We have a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Kat Q, or I go by Kat Q.
She goes by Kat Q.
That's your stage name.
It is. It's recommended to me by a casting director.
What? He recommended it? What do you mean?
I was an intern at a casting studio with the purpose of...
Oh, she has the insights then.
Yeah. I was just trying to get whatever knowledge I could. And the deal was that if I worked for free for 3 months, I would get a sit down with one of the owners, which was a casting director at the time. Mm-hmm. And she just told me, she's like, look, you have an ethnically ambiguous look. Lean into it. When they see your full name on the paper, they don't know how to feel about it. They're going to look at you and then it's going to be a mixed bag. You're Kat Q. You show them what you are inside.
You know what? There is so much truth to that. First of all, one of my friends, Anatoly Pancheco, he was in Infinity. He was in the League of Bureaus. He's like in Morocco right now. Anyway, so he had the same thing happen to him almost. Well, almost. So he worked at a casting company for 4 months, 3-4 months, and then they allowed him to audition for something.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah. But they had the same thing because his name's Anatoly Pancheco. Mm-hmm. Very obviously Russian, Ukrainian sounding.
Right.
Yeah. And me and him, I remember we used to stay up nights and be like, he was like, okay, what's the American version of Anatoly? I was like, it's Anthony. But I was like, so we were like a hair away from like changing his name to Anthony Wolf. But then he was casted as Anatoly Pancheco. So I was like, oh, no, I don't do it anymore.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah. No, it's all good. Yeah. What, before getting to all the stuff, mm-hmm. what made you say, oh, I'm going to, we'll get to that later. So, Kat Q, where are you from?
I'm Colombian. So I just had the hesitation of when people ask me where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in, or I grew up in a lot of places. Like I was raised in Colombia, South America, in Cali. Mm-hmm. Very warm in weather and warm environment. Like everyone, the neighbors. And the neighbors,
yeah.
Son, daughter, mom, always.
Right.
And then I went back to New Jersey. That was my first, that's where I learned English.
Hmm.
And then I went down to South Carolina. And by I mean my family. And
right. Right.
How long were you in Colombia?
I was there until I was about 7.5, 8 years old.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Hey, those are all the formative kid years.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, those are all the formative kid years. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what made your family come to America?
Better life, better quality of life. And before my full family moved over, we had some aunts. My great-grandmother had been in America and Puerto Rico. She worked mm-hmm. all her life. And they just, it's just, there was this very specific time in Colombia that was very rough.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just started automatically migrating out.
Mm-hmm. And what about South Carolina spoke to you guys?
She went to New Jersey for
New Jersey.
Well, hold up. All right, if we're thinking about all the states in America to learn English from, New Jersey, that's a harsh. That's like you didn't dip your toe into the pool; you got thrown into the deep end.
Yeah.
New Jersey, man, they have beef all the time with New York. That must have been interesting.
It was, and it's hilarious because I have a lot of. We have a large family, so I grew up with just. Cousins all the time.
Everyone's your cousin.
Yeah. And they're also, they already had spoken English. They already learned. So jabbing at you, they joking
and
poking.
Teach you all
and I'm
the
like,
curse
I
words.
Need to understand.
Yeah.
So it's an impetus to get to learning faster. I also just really like languages.
Oh, that's cool.
And I took to it very quickly. And yeah, that was.
What other languages do you know besides English and Spanish?
So I speak Spanish and English fluently. I speak French conversationally, and I'm learning Russian.
She speaks French.
Oh,
je parle un petit peu français.
I speak a little French myself. Croissant à la mode.
Oui.
Eiffel Tower.
So
you're coming from Colombia. You move around a little bit in the United States. When did you know that you wanted to start acting?
Funnily enough, I remember the earliest memory of ever even thinking about like, what is acting that is an actor or they're pretending is not real is novelas. My mom would tell us bedtime is at 7 p.m. and she'd close her bedroom door and puts us to bed.
Yeah.
And I would hear the TV come on and novela starts at 7.
She's watching her stories.
So, yeah, so I would crack the door open and I would just sit there like that. And always these ridiculous stories and things like that. But I found it very, like a way to, a place to put something. I don't know. I found it very
Like, it lets you escape.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I first saw it. And then so when I was growing up, I would, for some reason, tell my mom, like, I want to be an actress or I want to be a dancer. But we didn't have money for either one of those things.
Yeah.
So I don't know why, where, when. She's a wonderful mother. She would always be like, yes, yes, that's great. Like,
oh, she was supportive.
Yeah, she was. She never, ever told me, you're crazy. You're like a
that
little girl.
That is so wonderful to hear. We have so many sad stories on the show. We have so many sad stories on the show. That is great to hear. All right. So a lot of people who listen to the show, a lot of them are already in the industry. Mm-hmm. But there's some people who want to get into industry. Mm-hmm. And guys, if you're listening, see, look, some people do care. Sometimes
some people's families do care.
They does happen,
and they do want them.
And she didn't have any money to back up the fact that she was supporting me emotionally, but she kept telling me yes. Even when we were in New Jersey, she took me a couple times to like those things they do at the malls where they're like, come and be seen by whatever agency, you'll do like a little fake runway thing or whatever. And they tell you that it's like, that's how you get into any kind of place in this industry.
Yeah.
But she was just looking for a way to do it without having money. So we went to a couple of those.
That sounds so sweet.
Yeah. Lovely. She's, you guys are going to make me cry. But she then just kept doing that and fueling that emotional part for me, even though we didn't have money. And to the point where when I got to high school, I realized if I'm going to be able to go to college because we don't have money, I have to be on top of my game with grades. And I was just a nerd. Like, I just buckled down. I got good grades the whole way through. And I was when I had my pick of colleges, I was like, no, I can actually study what I said I wanted to. So I told myself that I would. But at the same time, they don't give you financial aid when you say, I want to be an actor.
That's true.
Right.
So that's true.
I told the University of South Carolina that I wanted to be a double major in biology and theater. And the amount of people that looked at me with these sad little eyes that were like, oh, you poor thing, you don't know what you're doing. They said it was difficult. It was, nobody does double majors. People get too stressed.
When I was in undergrad, something that I thought was really great. So my uncle, I love my uncle, but he didn't go to college, but he's like very street smart. This is when I was going to Florida State. He was like, because I was planning on double majoring myself. I was thinking about doing politics and continuing my STEM research, right? A STEM degree. Mm-hmm. So he was like, why don't you just choose the one that makes the most money and then spend all your time doing the other one? Then you won't be in class. You just do it when you feel like doing it.
Yeah.
And I was like, why didn't I think of this? This is why you got to talk to your elders sometimes. Yeah. So you were double majoring in biology and theater, and I'm pretty sure they thought, oh, she wants to teach Fist to dance. Of course. This is what this is leading to.
So, no, it actually, because most of my financial, like, it was all scholarships or grants. Mm. And technically it ended up that I was being just paid to go to school at that point. But it was mostly because of the biology portion. So I had to keep up with, like, the lectures, everything. The grades had to be almost perfect. Mm. To the point where there was a moment where I got a C somewhere. I don't remember what class it was. And I almost cried and freaked out because I was like, I'm losing my life.
Yeah.
Which is not as healthy, I see now. But I came to a point where I was so busy doing, like, I think it was population science math problems.
Mm.
They're like pages of math problems. And I was sitting there working on them. And I enjoyed that work. But I was like, this is not what I want for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
It's not. And I was at that point, I had gone through, I was supposed to be the vice president of a sorority.
You joined a sorority.
I was starting the first chat where I was... They might not like that I'm saying I was helping because I came over here. But it was like the first chapter in the University of South Carolina of a Latina sorority.
Oh, very interesting. I'm part of a fraternity myself. Mm-hmm. And something that, like, we loved partying with the Latin fraternities and sororities because they can all dance.
Yeah.
No, there's no offense to some of the Caucasian fraternities and sororities. But, like, usually...
We had no idea how to dance.
And usually there's, like, a huge discrepancy in the DJ to choose.
Right.
Usually there's a huge... That's always the first thing.
Well,
it's
why
like,
are
oh,
you staring
DJ?
At me, man? I didn't do anything. Why are you staring at me like that?
He turned his chair in your direction.
Like I did something
I slow turned the chair and everything.
Like, listen, I can't dance, but I have no problem making a fool of myself on the dance floor.
I've seen Nicholas dance. He can dance. He just does it in his own way. I'll give him
that's
that much.
That's being nice to say he can't dance.
But so you did all of that at university, and then you're like, okay, you know what?
I didn't finish.
You didn't graduate.
Oh, Kanye West.
I actually, when I was going through that, the moment that I realized that the sorority life wasn't quite for me, or at least that one, I didn't really like some of the ways that the, what are they called, the bigs were talking to.
The way that some of them were interacting with each other.
I didn't like it because the whole idea behind that one sorority was that they were very much emphasizing like the education part of it, being together in that and celebrating. Mm-hmm. We're just learning and things like that. That wasn't the core of it, as I found out. But because of that, I went through this big shift in my life. It was very intense. I had to move off campus. I was by myself. I was just very isolated. Mm-hmm. And I thank God that happened because it allowed me to see exactly what I didn't want for my life. And mm-hmm. also then I had to have that moment, which I know I heard in an interview from you, of, okay, I'm going to call my mom first.
Yeah.
Then I'll talk to my dad. My mom.
The mom always feels like the softer blow, doesn't it? It always does.
Because I'm like, at the very least, even if she's upset, she's always going to do
right.
that. And my dad is a sweetheart too, but I feel like his immediate reaction when I called him, and I was like, hey, I'm going to backtrack a little bit because this is actually quite significant. And if he ever hears this, I want him to. Mm-hmm. There's a guy in my high school who I saw once in a play. He was big. He was this big guy. And he was an amazing, phenomenal actor, phenomenal singer. I don't know where he gets his voice from. And it just stuck with me. And when I saw him share on Facebook one day, I'm going to these auditions being held in Atlanta. Atlanta was like 3 hours from my family. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait a minute. He's going to move to L.A., go become this and do that with his life. And we went to the same high school and we lived like
same origin story.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sitting here. So I immediately went, cool, let's see if I can go into these. What is audition? I didn't know what to do. And then I saw that it just so happens that I think it was a couple of months away from when I was sitting there looking at it, that AMDA conservatory that I went to here.
Oh,
they were having auditions in Atlanta. And they just required for you to do typical two monologues.
The monologue. The comedy, the drama monologue.
But at that time, I'd never done a monologue. So I'm sitting there like, I don't even know what I was looking for. I just knew like, this shift was happening. And I'm like, I need to do something. So when I call my dad, I'm like, I think I want to go try this audition. His immediate response was, I thought you liked animals. Because my track was to go
for biology.
To veterinary school and stuff like that.
The track that you tell to lie to other people. The lie track.
The promise.
Oh man, it's so much fun because you can say that you're gonna do anything because
you don't have to follow through on any of it.
We're looking at the other classes.
And they're like, oh yeah, I'm. They're like, oh, so were you studying? Because I studied also political science when I was in school, and they were like, oh, why did you? When I was in college, oh, why are you studying? Oh, I'm gonna be a mayor one day. My goals is to be a mayor of Tallahassee.
Yeah.
Tallahassee, Florida.
Yeah.
The capital of Florida that's unappreciated. People don't even know it's the capital of Florida. They think it's Orlando or Miami, but it's not. It's this border town next to Georgia that no one cares about.
So your dad's reaction to you wanting to be an actress was?
He was a little, I think, nervous because they don't have money. You know what I mean? We never had money. And I don't say that.
He was like, how are you going to do this?
Yeah. I don't want to say that in a boohoo way. I meant more so like they just
genuinely curious.
Yeah, and also, they've been through so much. And they had already switched countries and things like that. So you got to do something. You got to prepare somehow first. And so I talked to him a little more. And he's the one that ended up taking me to the audition, to audition for AMDA to Atlanta. And when I came out the door, he was like a little kid. He was, how did it go? How did it go? I'm like, I thought you didn't want me here.
He's like, help me every day.
So ever since then, I think he saw how much it meant to me.
So you got in?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. How was that?
It was great. I had never been in an environment where I was solely focusing on that. Like I was always doing some math problems, some biology lectures, some chemistry thing.
Been doing acting as a hobby, it's the
main
thing.
Would go home and study, but instead of studying for my finals, I was over there memorizing Twelfth Night. Mm. And it was because it was my first time reading like this play in this way or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was great. It was great and it was weird. Because I had never been in that environment, I got introduced to the tension or the kind of cattiness of, this is a performing arts school.
So, Nicholas, you have more experience in this area.
So, what you're saying is that you found out how two-faced people could be.
No, I didn't say that. Yeah.
You found out.
Look, this is our show.
We can do what we want.
Right. Okay, So, look.
So, not necessarily like two-faced. More so this need to have this front of like, this is who I am. When in reality, I was walking in. I don't know. I've never been to the state. I've never been to the city. Right. I've never been in the school. I've never had theater friends.
I didn't grow up in the theater world as they did.
I've been doing plays since I was 12, and I felt very much, and it might also be just me being self-conscious at the time, but it felt very much, everyone here thinks I don't belong here. But then the way the school set it up, they had this orientation, and it just so happens immediately I glommed onto this one girl. She's from Argentina, Buenos Aires. Phenomenal musical theater. She's a singer. But her dad and my mom met at the parents' orientation, and me and her met, and then when we joined up, we're like, oh, great, we're going to be roommates.
Oh, yeah. Done deal.
I had my mom and another mom. Her daughter was from Alabama. So they, like, globbed on to each other and became real good friends. To the point where the moms tried to conspire together to get us to become a couple.
That's hilarious.
Did you?
No.
They didn't conspire well enough.
No, because I was talking to my mom years later, and because they're still friends to this day, right? It's been years.
They found out the moms broke out the blueprint and was like, all right.
Yeah. How are we going to get this done?
They would have legitimate conversations going. Okay, I like you, and I like your son. Mm-hmm. How do we get them together?
Yeah.
And I was not in it in the slightest.
Looking back on it, did you think of any moments where, like, me and her were in this situation together that we would normally never have been in the same place?
No. Because I didn't allow it.
That's what the issue was.
I was not interested in the slightest. But anyway, yeah, it's... The thing is, you know this just as well as we do. The industry, the entertainment industry, attracts pretty much the most broken of people.
Yeah.
And I think the most common thing that happens is they expect what they want to fulfill them, to fill that hole of whatever it might be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the thing is also, I can't let you know that I'm vulnerable. I can't let you know that I need something from this.
It goes against the work.
Right, exactly. Because that is what's preventing you from putting out such incredible work.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, all three of us in this room can think about at least 10 times where we've been screwed over. So it's a paradox of, I'd love to be vulnerable, but I can't tell you that I'm vulnerable because then you're going to screw me over.
Right. Yeah, it's very quite interesting. I think that it's a little bit different from my experience because you guys went to acting schools. There was an acting wing in the school that I went to. But with filmmaking, it wasn't like, I would say there's a little bit of vibrato, but it's more like everyone... just being Kanye West. Everyone there was like, oh, I'm a genius. Oh, everything I've made, it's just genius. Oh, you should look at
God,
this.
I wish I had that confidence.
Yeah, everyone there, they all just thought they were geniuses. I did not know. I went there to do, like, costuming, and I ended up doing not that. But, so you, here in L.A., and one thing that's really interesting about the current landscape is that there is some complaints from some audiences that are like, okay, we see literally the same actors in every movie. There is not a movie out there where, like, finally we see some new faces. Unlike, like, you would have seen back in the early thousands, where it's, oh, okay. Like, for example, in Harry Potter, not only him, but, like, that whole cast. You had no idea who these people were.
Boy.
They were kids, that's true. But at the same time, even the adults were playing some of the roles. You had not really have seen them before.
That comes down to money. Nowadays, everything is so risky.
Yeah.
And the studios are like, we have to make this or it's our... But
right. So in this current landscape, what is your opinion, or how do you think that studios can possibly be more comfortable opening up to newer cast members?
How they can become more comfortable?
Yeah, more comfortable with it, I guess.
I think they don't need to be comfortable. I think you're supposed to lean into the uncomfortable. I think the point is to make them uncomfortable.
Mm.
I think that the idea that we need, that they need to, I think the idea that they should be comfortable at all is, I think, ridiculous, because the artists are, like you said, going through pain. And actually, it's funnily enough, before I came here, I was listening to an interview with Shakira. And she goes, artists have this luxury of transforming pain into something else.
You're right.
But the people providing the money, yes, they're giving that support for us to give the platform to the artists, but they're not the ones digging through that. They're not the ones going through the experiences.
Very true.
They shouldn't. Why are they comfortable? We're not comfortable down here sweating.
Yeah.
But that's, I think it's silly that we think of the business side of art in that way. Like, it should somehow reflect the art as opposed to that dogmatic structure of this is how we do business and we must get the money.
Yeah. It's quite interesting. I used to work in development, and some of the when we did our packaging, the first thing that I always want to say is, oh, who's in it? They'll say, is it paid for first? Ironically, when we had projects, they'll say, is it paid for? Meaning that, oh, are you going to need money for this? And then they say, oh, who's in it? And a lot of times I worked at Hot Pop Productions, and at the time, we had like a lot of like newer faces and stuff like that we were trying to put out. And they'd always go, okay, you know what? We'll work a deal. We'll say we'll get X amount of new people, but then we need X amount of like famous people. And then eventually what they'll always do is, oh, we need less and less and less and less like new people until eventually no one's new. Right.
There's right? no new people.
Right.
So something that I think is quite interesting, especially about what you're saying, is that, you know, they should sweat too. And I don't really mean the people that like stuck in the middle. There are some like assistants or some people who are like, they're like juniors or, oh, I just have to make sure I do good. In fact, Nicholas and I talked about this on a previous episode in which some executives, just to keep their jobs, give you terrible notes on purpose.
What?
Just because, yeah, just so they could justify them being there.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I've written some scripts and had projects that were made that they were like, oh, I just have to give a note because I'm a junior exec. My senior exec boss is here. So I need to make sure that I look like I know what I'm doing. So I'm going to tell you things to purposely mess up what you're doing.
No integrity.
No integrity at all.
The thing is I haven't spoken in 15 minutes.
So I look like I'm stupid. Yeah.
So I look like I'm an idiot. Or I haven't spoken at all during this meeting because I have no idea what I'm talking about or what I would say. But my boss is right here, and
he's not paying attention to the person up there presenting or the creator.
Right.
He's like, looking at me like, do you deserve to be senior?
Why do I have you on as my junior executive if you've offered nothing this whole time?
Yeah.
And if I have no, I'm white, right? If people didn't know already, I'm white. We're doing the project we're currently doing right now. If I were to sit here and try and give you notes on that just to justify to the upper management, just so it looks like I'm doing my job, but it would be counterintuitive to making
the project successful.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, there are very rare instances in which they give notes that are good. Not
like useful?
I will say in these specific instances. Mm-hmm. Sometimes executives do give notes that are good, but usually in my experience, it's always been other artists that give me the best notes because they're the ones actively doing it.
Yeah, but that's from a more personal place as opposed to, this is what it says in the binder.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes they give, very rarely they'll have one W where it'll just end up magically working. One of my favorite stories about the magical note that actually did work, that the executives will ride until the wheels fall off for the next 100 years. This one choice. Batman Beyond.
Right?
Yeah. In Batman Beyond, this guy was like, oh, one of the executives, oh, Batman's old. We don't like that. We need to freshen up Batman. And they're like, people like Batman, man. I don't know if that's a good idea. He goes, no, he needs to be a teen. He has to be cool. And also, he needs to have a girlfriend. And they're like, what? And also, Batman originally is just not in it. It's just like he's like a descendant of this person. And they're like, I don't know about that, man. He goes, all right, cool. You know what? I guess you're going to have Batman in it. But just so you know, I like Spider-Man. And they're like, what? This is true. Huh? What do you mean? Like, what does it have to do with anything? And he's like, make him like Spider-Man. And then, that's it. Cool Batman, teen. He needs to have a girlfriend. The old Batman's there. And then future Spider-Man. Go ahead, go. And the team of artists are just so good at what they do, it actually ended up working out.
They interpreted it at its highest level that they could have.
So for an actress such as yourself, you have this hardworking background, mm-hmm. right? How does that translate into how you prepare for roles?
Just give me like the goosebumps because it's my favorite part.
Yeah.
Because it's like I was obsessed with science and like the scientific process and the fact that you can break things down, figure out how they work, go back to the cellular, molecular, like the essence of everything. Mm. And then I also, after AMDA, I'm currently in Playhouse West where they practice Meisner. And it's very much focused on listening and what's in front of you and playing off the other person. Essentially, the other actors do your work for you when you really connect to that.
Like drawing them out too.
Yeah, and it just makes everything more grounded. But that is because of that. For example, the last thing I would do, and again, I'm going to say this first because I hesitate always to talk about anything about process because I'm not like, this is the way that you're supposed to do it. No, yeah. Everybody has their own way. But I'm still even discovering what I do. But my favorite part is breaking everything down. Going from initially what it is, whatever resonated with me from when I read it, as my boyfriend puts it, as like a newspaper. You read the script like a newspaper for facts. What's the story? What is this? Does it even connect with something in here? Mm. When it does, I go back in. And then I start looking for, okay, what is the author's point of view? Where is this person coming from and why do they care?
Right.
Which is why when I told you I saw the one. But it's the last thing I even worry about is memorization. Because for me, it's the work, the intention of the human being, the soul behind
Once you get the core right, the rest of it will fall into place.
Yeah. And I think that's the same with anything. When you care about the why more than who or me or whatever.
Or the superficial stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it just naturally starts melding together. And also it breeds for more specifically bringing the director's vision to life, I think.
You know, it's quite interesting. You speak about breaking it down science-wise. I'm the only person I know who studies scripts with an Excel sheet. Like, when I read a script, I don't want to break down.
Tell me, please.
So I'll look at a script that I really like, and I want to break it down and really study. And this is a super simplified version because my Excel sheets are pretty large. But I will literally make a column that says, for characters, I'll make another column for, like, intention. Mm-hmm. I'll make another column for his character, intention, setting on character, meaning that how is the character using the setting, like the action space and stuff like that. And I'll basically start, like, numbering them. Oh, okay, this character is in here. This character is in this one. Okay, and this scene lasted for a page and a half. What happened in this page and a half scene? He started in this emotional state, and then it went into this emotional state at the end.
Do you do that as a writer, director, or actor, or just any time with any script?
Any script. I do it with all my scripts. With all scripts that I write or scripts that... Because it gives you a more broad view of what's actually going on.
It's almost like you're seeing the storytelling structure.
Yeah. It's essentially. And what makes good scenes good. Mm-hmm. So, it's been so great having you on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
So, where can people follow you?
I am on Instagram as KatQ, or am I the, what is it called, the handle?
The handle,
KQ, yeah, I know so much about Instagram. KQUICE, and then that's pretty much it, because you can see me on whatever screen's up next.
Oh, yeah. Great. Well, thank you for coming. Guys, this has been Film Center News. My name is Derek Johnson II.
I'm Nicholas Killian.
And we're here with?
KatQ.
And we'll see you next time.
See ya.
This has been Film Center on Comic-Con Radio. Check out our previous episodes at ComicConRadio.com. You can follow the show at Film Center News on all major social media platforms. Tune in next Wednesday for a fresh update. Until next time, this has been Film Center.